Willie and D Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Adam Vingan, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Nick Frazier here with you on Thursday afternoon. So in the previous segment, we were discussing the odds the Titans have of going worst to first in the AFC South. 19 of 21 seasons since the NFL went to its current alignment, a team has gone from worst in its division to first the following season. Now, the Titans will have a tough road in order to make that happen. They have relatively long odds to make that happen. I would guess that none of us in here expect that to happen. But nevertheless, one thing that we like to look at this time of year when charting a team's path is their strength of schedule. And there are many ways to go about doing this. I think the most common is looking at each team's projected win total in Vegas. And according to, I believe it was Sharp Football Analysis, the Titans have one of the toughest schedules in the NFL based on the projected win total of their opponents. But Mike Sandow over at The Athletic had a follow-up to his quarterback tier story that we discussed earlier in the week, ranking NFL schedules by opposing quarterbacks based on his tiers. And I thought this was interesting. So the Titans were number nine. The Titans were number nine on his list with an average opposing quarterback tier of 2.61. And what's interesting is that Sandow writes in the article, the Titans rose a league-high 16 spots on this list from last year. So last season, the Titans were 25th on this list in terms of opposing quarterbacks in his tiers system. They've shot all the way up to ninth, which is the largest jump on his list year over year. And Derek, you made an astute point yesterday when talking about the Titans schedule, because it is a fourth place schedule. I'm using air quotes here. It is a fourth place schedule, but that includes Joe Burrow and the Cincinnati Bengals and Justin Herbert and the Los Angeles Chargers, both of whom were injured, which is why their teams finished in last place.
Yeah, I get that. And that's a point that as we were leaving yesterday and Jared was coming in, he brought up that point, which I hadn't thought about because I'm just thinking, you know, which for the record, I've always been, against this whole notion of, oh, your schedule's tougher than that schedule because you finished last. My thing, every schedule in the National Football League is a tough schedule. That's just the way it sort of works itself out. But to sort of go along with this, you know, weaker schedule, tougher schedule thing, I look at this schedule and I do stand corrected in regards to because I didn't look at it from the quarterback standpoint. I just looked at it from them being a fourth place team. They typically get an easier schedule, but because Cincinnati was 9-8, they finished fourth in their division. They tend to get it. They would be considered one of those easier teams, but they're really not. They've beaten Joe Burrow before, so I don't see that as something they can't do.
So as we do this, let's go through the quarterbacks that are on the Titans schedule. They're listed here by the tier in Mike Sandow's quarterback tier. So,
which makes them the ninth toughest schedule by Mike Sandow's tier
rankings.
And it's
the biggest jump year over year. They were 25th on this list last season. Mm-hmm. They are now at ninth. So the Titans play two tier one quarterbacks this season, Joe Burrow and Derek's best friend, Josh Allen. So they play two tier one quarterbacks. They play multiple tier two quarterbacks, Justin Herbert, Aaron Rodgers, C.J. Stroud twice, Jared Goff, and Jordan Love. Those are the Tier 2 quarterbacks. The Tier 3 quarterbacks, Tua Tagovailoa, Trevor Lawrence twice, and Caleb Williams. Tier 4 quarterbacks, Anthony Richardson twice, Jaden Daniels, Sam Darnold, and Jacoby Brissett. So those are the quarterbacks the Titans are scheduled to face. Of course, injuries can play into this, but these are the starting quarterbacks the Titans are scheduled to face this season, broken down by tier.
Again, I look at it from this standpoint. They've beaten Joe Burrow before.
But they beat a compromised Joe Burrow.
It's a compromised Joe Burrow, but it's still, nonetheless, they beat a Joe Burrow. We got to see what Josh Allen will be like without Diggs engage.
And we'll have a good idea of that because the Titans played the Bills in week 7.
Exactly.
So we'll have a pretty good idea of what the Bills look like without those weapons by the time the Titans face them.
Exactly. They've beaten a Justin Herbert. Aaron Rodgers, that's, you know, you just don't know what you're going to get. Do I expect them to go out and beat the Jets first game of the season? I mean, not first game of the season, first home game of the season.
Week two.
There's a high possibility that they win that game. CJ Stroud, when you play a division game, it's always tough. No matter what, you know, who the quarterback is, it's always going to be tough. So I get it to have CJ Stroud up there. All right, whatever. Goff, the Lions as a team. I'm not even looking at Goff. I'm just looking at the Lions team, mm-hmm. period. They're a good team,
Yes. Even
with Goff or without Goff. Jordan Love is another. Can he repeat what he did the last 8 games of the season? After that, you've beaten Tua. You've beaten Lawrence. You're going to beat Williams. First game of the season against that deep, I would love to play him first game
of
the season.
Is that an early take it to the bank?
It's an early take it to the bank.
Okay. Just
a lot of newness in that
Richardson,
game from a lot of angles.
Yes.
Richardson, he's an unknown, okay? Give me Chase. Give me Daniels. I'll play him all day, every day. Give me Darnold. I'll play him twice on Sunday. Matter of fact, I'll play Darnold 3 times on Sunday. Brissett, I'll play him 4 times on Sunday. Give me him too. Again, I look at this schedule or I look at these quarterbacks, and this is not some, you know, task that the Titans cannot figure out. This is not a task they can't go up against and complete, so to speak. They have tough quarterbacks on here. I get it. But it's not just all about the quarterback. It's their team as well. So, yes, we're looking at the quarterbacks. Yes, we're looking at their tiers. But what about the makeup of the whole team? You know, that's what I'm looking at. I'm not just looking at quarterbacks per se, because every quarterback on this list, they've beaten, with the exception of C.J. Stroud. They didn't play Aaron Rodgers last season. They beat Joe Burrow. They didn't play Allen last year. They beat Tua. They beat Lawrence. They didn't play Caleb Williams. They beat Indianapolis, I think, once. Didn't they beat Indianapolis?
No, they lost them both.
They
if
lost,
I'm not mistaken,
but Richardson wasn't
Richardson
a quarterback.
Was hurt in the game against the Titans.
The first game.
The first game
he
got hurt.
And then he was obviously out in the second game.
Which it turned out possibly to be a blessing for Indianapolis, because I would rather have played against Richardson than Gardner Minshew, because he's a better passer at this point in time in his career.
I'll say this. I used to subscribe to this theory. I remember a couple years ago being worried that, you know, you've got this difference of schedule, the first place schedule versus the fourth place, and what quarterbacks does that give you that are different from your teams in the division. I used to be into that. I've changed quite a bit since then. And let me give you a couple examples. The obvious thing here is we can look at this all day, but it is going to change a lot. You texted Adam last year's preseason tiers of who the Titans were going to face.
Yes, and keep in mind, because this happened before the season, there are quarterbacks on the list that Willie's about to read that the Titans ultimately didn't face because they may have been injured.
Right. Let's just take the two rookies. How much did we spend sort of putting in the corner of maybe the Titans could win the division? Hey, you've got two rookie quarterbacks, Stroud and Richardson. Can you exploit them and do well in division games and you eke it out if Jacksonville maybe doesn't have a great year? Well, let's talk about what happened. As Adam mentioned, in the first game against the Colts, Richardson got hurt in the first quarter, didn't play again the rest of the year. So they faced Gardner Minshew from that point on in the two games, and they lost both anyway. So that is a major change of who they thought they were going to face. C.J. Stroud was preseason last year an unknown, so they put him in Tier 4. He was certainly anything but a Tier 4 when he played against the Titans late in the season. And by the way, he missed the game here against the Titans, and they lost the game anyway I guess it was Case Keenum, if I remember correctly, that won. So those two overtime losses at home to the Colts and the Texans were killers because they got to face the backup quarterback. So there's a lot that can happen. On the other side of the coin, Trevor Lawrence, who last year was going into the year as a Tier 2, did not play like a Tier 2, so much so that he has dropped to Tier 3. this year. So a tier two quarterback could be having a bad year. For example, by the end of the year, Trevor Lawrence was hobbled by a number of different injuries. He was not himself, and the Titans fully exploited that and beat him. So there are things that just are completely unpredictable. But the one thing I think we can say for sure is it is not going to line up week by week how it is laid out on paper right here for all of those reasons. I'll give you one more. Deshaun Watson, last year on paper, he was a tier two. Well, he had a terrible year. But the only game he played like a tier two was against the Titans early in the season when they ripped him 27-3 in the game where we figured out once and for all, I think, that
that offensive line
was not going to work.
So it'll be interesting to see how this shakes out, because I agree with Derek. It's not solely about the quarterback. It's about the team around the quarterback. But there are some high-level quarterbacks that the Titans are going to face throughout this season. Unless they get hurt, which, as we said, happened last season. Joe Burrow, the Titans faced him last season. He was half the man that he usually is. He was a compromised Joe Burrow.
He was on one leg.
Right.
He couldn't take snaps under center, and he was trying to play on a really bad ankle. Mm-hmm.
But if we all believe that the Titans' defense has improved, and it certainly has on paper, that being the operative phrase, on paper, they should be better equipped to handle these high-level quarterbacks.
Yeah, they should. And again, it's not – the quarterback is where it starts, obviously. And if you have a quarterback that has the ability to, you know, win games and whatnot, then okay, that gives you sort of that leg up. But then what does the team as a whole look like? We don't know what Buffalo is going to look like after losing their two starting receivers and what they lost in the secondary last year. They lost both of their safeties, and their safeties were damn good. They lost both of their safeties. You look at the Chargers. What are the Chargers doing? They're rebuilding their team. They got some young guys. They got a new head coach, even though I think Harbaugh is one of the best head coaches in all of sports. They're still a team that is still trying to figure it out around their quarterback. Aaron Rodgers, that could be a cluster. I just read that things ain't going well with the Jets and Aaron Rodgers inside that building. So that could be a cluster.
Color me shocked by that,
exactly.
By the way.
Exactly. That could be a cluster when they play in the second game of the season. Go down to, you know, C.J. Stroud, people may figure some things out, and they may take a slight step back as you're taking a slight step forward. Goff, you can go down the list with each one of these. I think the most solid team that they're going to have to face on here is the Detroit Lions. From top to bottom, offense, defense, and special teams, that is the most complete team they have on their schedule. Every other team on this schedule, or every other quarterback on this schedule, has a wart with their team. Even Joe Burrow, his defense isn't great. They're still trying to figure out the offensive line. What are we going to... We don't even know if they're going to be able to sign Ja'Marr Chase, because if they don't sign him, I don't expect him to play.
And he hasn't been practicing.
Exactly. So we need to watch that whole Ja'Marr Chase thing too as well. Will he come into camp and be there without a contract? If that is indeed the case, he comes, he's going to be disgruntled as well. So we got to look at not just the quarterback in this situation, but look at each team in its totality, because it's not – Will Levis versus Burrow, or Will Levis versus Allen or Herbert. It's the Will Levis-led Titans versus the Joe Burrow-led Cincinnati Bengals. What else does Cincinnati have outside of that? They got some damn good players, but what will it look like when the Titans have to play them that week? We saw what it looked like last year. He was hobbled. He can possibly be hobbled again. So I get the quarterbacks, but it's not all about the quarterback. It doesn't end with the quarterback. It ends with how good is your team. It starts with the quarterback, yes, but how good is your team under the quarterback? That's what's going to determine whether you have success, long-term success, or consistent success, or whether you're just going to be a team that's up and down all season.
615-737-1025, our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Let's stick with that Will Levis-led Tennessee Titans, because Willie, you've come with something quite interesting as it relates to Will Levis. We'll get to that next. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan today as the Nashville Sounds take on Charlotte. Pregame at 5:20, first pitch at 5:35, with coverage also available on 94.9 The Fan app and at 94.9thefan.com. Sounds Baseball, 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks Family Leisure, Five Points Roofing, and Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. Tune into 102.5, 106.3, The Game this Saturday for Vanderbilt football. The Commodores will start off the season at home against the Virginia Tech Hokies, with pregame beginning at 9:30 a.m. and kickoff at 11. Coverage is also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Chris Sanders picking that game, much to the chagrin of Derek Mason, during silly underdog picks. Chris Sanders riding with the Commodores at home to upset the Hokies. Adam Vingan, Willie Donick, Derek Mason here with you. So we were just talking about the quarterbacks that the Titans are going to face during the season and why that gives, according to Mike Sando at The Athletic, the Titans one of the toughest schedules in the NFL. But it's also about the development of Will Levis. And Willie, there's a word that we mentioned this with Derek and Josh Allen. I have found there is a word that, particularly when it came to the Predators in recent years, but maybe in general, that is your trigger word, and that trigger word is plan. What's the what's the plan, Willie? That trust me, we got a lot of mileage out of that one. But you came across something interesting as it relates to Will Levis and the plan in general for young quarterbacks in the NFL.
Yeah, the what's the plan, I do think, is something that comes up from time to time, and it came up a few years ago with the Predators, and I was like, how can anybody be unclear about the plan? It was clear to me, but people are like, I don't know what he's doing. I don't know what they're doing. And you definitely have this conflict that comes up from time to time. Recently, I was listening to the GM Shuffle, which I like to. I've referred to it a number of times on this show. Michael Lombardi, not that I think he's the end-all, be-all, but I think the discussion on that podcast from a GM's perspective, and he is opinionated, I think creates good thought. And he was having a very animated discussion about the Patriots and his concern. And I'm not following the Patriots from anything more than whatever comes up on SportsCenter or whatever. But obviously, they're trying to figure out what to do at quarterback, and they have decided to start Jacoby Brissett over Drake May, the high first-round pick. But apparently, it was a long process, and Lombardi's insight and information told him that there were a lot of forces being pulled in different directions on what to do in this situation. The Patriots are obviously in a full rebuild, do not want to throw their quarterback to the Wolves, but you've heard their young rookie coach from the University of Tennessee, Jerod Mayo, say Brissett has not been as good as Drake May in the preseason. So there's indecision, it seems like, at least from afar, and that was Lombardi's take. So it had me thinking about this, what is the plan? And I got to thinking about what the Titans have done to try to set up Will Levis. Okay, so here's, you got Lombardi ready here, Nick? Here's what Lombardi said about young quarterbacks. And remember, this is in the context of talking about the Patriots, but it applies to any team that's trying to figure out how to decide and how to evaluate a young quarterback.
As we all know, there's no committees. There's no monuments dedicated to committee anywhere. So I just think, to me, that what I've seen over my career, and this isn't a knock on New England, this is a knock on every team, including teams I've been with, is when you don't have a really good plan for the quarterback and stick to the plan, you could affect the quarterback's progress. And I would stick to the plan. And here's why. Because say May goes in there, and the first four games he just doesn't play well. Now you've got to bench him and put Brissett in the game. And now you've kind of demoralized the kid, got him off, you got the media back there. You know, you got to play all these into effect.
Okay, so he goes into the Patriots situation. They've made their decision, okay? So it got me thinking about what is the plan that the Titans have laid out for Will Levis. I think, now you guys tell me, it is pretty detailed and laid out to where I don't know if it's going to work. None of us know if Will Levis is going to do well or not. But at the end of the day, I don't think they're going to I don't think anybody can say they had a disjointed, not everybody on the same page kind of plan. So here's what I thought when I was like, okay, how would I define? When you say, okay, ask me the question, Adam.
Willie, what's the plan?
Here's the plan for Will Levis. Offensive-minded coach with quarterback credentials hired as the head coach. Right? There's part one of the plan. Brian Callahan. Mm-hmm. Experience and depth picked up at receiver. Mm-hmm. Right? Going out and getting Ridley. They already had D-Hop. You still have Burks. You went out and got Boyd as an insurance policy. You drafted Jaquan Jackson. That's the plan. We don't know how this is going to work, but it is a sound thinking of let's give the guy some pieces that he can throw to. Competent running game, right? You lose a legend who maybe someday will have a statue or his number will be retired. Derrick Henry, he's gone. But you have brought in Tony Pollard. You have Tajay Spears. So you can say, we think we have a competent running game to support him. Check. Mm-hmm. It's planned, right? It makes sense. You're like, okay, I see the plan here. Investment in the offensive line with Bill Callahan, a first-round pick, left tackle, big money for free agent at center in Cushenberry. That's about as much as you could have done in 1 year. This is not going to be perfect, but you can see what they have done. And then a totally revamped defense that is designed to hopefully take a little pressure off of the quarterback. So all of this is lined up for one main reason, and that is, can we give our quarterback a chance to succeed? Maybe the guy can't play dead in a cowboy movie, right? That only time will tell. You just had the skeptic that you read at the end of last hour. He doesn't get the ball out quick enough. He can't read defenses. All of the questions, there will be plenty of questions about Levis. But do we agree today, before we go into Labor Day weekend, that the Titans have laid out a sensible plan for their quarterback? As Lombardi sort of says in his all years, like, quarterbacks have been ruined because they have had a bad plan for that quarterback and they crash and burn. I don't think Levis will crash and burn because of the plan. Do we agree on that?
I would agree with that. Whatever the, you know, how they are putting together this roster and how they're trying to surround Will Levis with playmakers or guys that are veteran guys that know how to play this game and play it at a high clip or, you know, good enough to help the young quarterback along. You're absolutely right. And, the GM is right in regards to this. And I said this about Malik Willis. I don't think there was a plan for Malik Willis. And you threw him out there.
That was a bad plan.
And you see exactly what happened. It took him 2 years to start to look like a potential backup quarterback because of what you did to him in his first year. Throwing him in there, and that roster was depleted because of injury, and you still threw him out there and expect him to play at a certain level and win you games. He won one game, but it wasn't because of him. It was because of the defense and they ran the football. You stunted his growth as a quarterback by throwing him out there. You put him in a situation that wasn't advantageous for him, and he's been trying to make it up this whole time. Now they traded him to Green Bay, and hopefully he's able to catch up even more. But you have to have a plan when you have these young quarterbacks, especially when you're drafting them in the first or second round, hell, even the third round. You got to have a plan for them because without a plan, you cannot succeed at that position or your franchise is going to be doing what Chicago did and looking for quarterback after quarterback after quarterback and they hoping that they found their quarterback now. You have to make sure that you're putting Will Levis in a position where, as I've always said, he doesn't feel as if he has to play hero ball. He thought he had to play hero ball last year. A lot of things went wrong. The mechanics wasn't there because why? He was throwing off his back foot. He was doing all this stuff because of the offensive line and the pass catchers were not adequate enough for him to go out there and play a game the way he knew how to play it. So, to me, they're setting up this team perfectly for him. Now is his opportunity to go out there and prove why they drafted him in the second round.
I think a prime example of what happens when the plan does not come together, the reverse A team, let's call it. I love it when a plan does not come together.
good early 80s reference, yeah. By the way.
And I was born in 1989, yeah. Just FYI. What happened with Bryce Young in Carolina last mm-hmm. year? I mean, if I recall correctly, there was a lot of infighting amongst the coaching staff, a lot of disagreement about how things should be set up there. I mean, you've got the meddling owner, to say the least, but it just seemed like there was a lack of cohesion among the Carolina Panthers, leading to what we saw from the team and specifically Bryce Young last season. It was a disastrous rookie season for Bryce Young.
Good example. Last year. And he will have to dig out of that hole. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't look like he's got a great surrounding supporting cast this year either. That's a one that could go a lot of different ways.
Well, another one, David Carr. Look at what
David Carr
did.
Is a great example.
I mean, they threw
the
him in there,
no
and he shouldn't have been underneath center. I know he was the first
Tim Couch
pick.
From your era too. Would
Tim
be the
Couch
same kind of thing.
Same way. It was like, yeah. I know he was the first pick in the draft, but just because you're the first pick doesn't mean that you should all automatically throw the guy in there. If your team isn't set up for your young quarterback to prosper, then don't put him in there until you're ready to set up a team. The Titans shouldn't have put Malik Willis in 2 years ago, and they were forced. They had sort of the right plan for Will Levis at the beginning because he wasn't the starter, and they didn't plan on playing him none last year, I don't think, if Ryan Tannehill stays healthy. So they had a plan in place, but because of injury, they had to sort of divert from that plan, and hopefully Will Levis is able to shake out those bad habits he was forming because of the offensive line and the lack of pass catchers. Let's just say that. Hopefully he's working himself out of that, and we will not see any residual effects of what happened last season.
Well, let's look at the Texans. Also a rookie quarterback in C.J. Stroud. Based off your checklist, Willie, it feels like the Texans from afar checked off all of those boxes, and we saw what happened with C.J. Stroud.
A lot of people talk about the Texans last year and say, well, you saw the Texans go from worst to first. But they had been bad for 3 years. So they had had a couple of drafts and a couple of seasons to build something around C.J. Stroud as he came in.
An NHL comparison, very Colorado Avalanche-like. You know, they had several bad years to get Nathan MacKinnon and to get Cale Makar and build up from there.
Yeah, and remember, they traded for an extra high first-round pick, and there was a lot of speculation that the Titans, you know, kind of were in that game but mm-hmm. got sort of outflanked because the Texans had a lot of extra draft capital, but they used a lot of it to get Will Anderson last year. Mm-hmm. So they made a lot of advancements. I think they hit on a head coach that was a home run. Mm-hmm. D'Amico Ryans has immediate, you know, ability to put that team together. But I think they had some more layers around C.J. And obviously they hit on Tank Dell.
Yes.
Was another sort of unexpected hit mm-hmm. that the Titans could absolutely use
yes.
these next couple of years. Some of these low round picks making a contribution. But I do think that Texans team that has been maligned a lot over the years for being all discombobulated, the DeAndre Hopkins trade, the Bill O'Brien, I'm the coach, I'm the GM. They had a lot of problems. The whole Deshaun Watson debacle, they had some issues. But I think behind the scenes, they had started to come out of it. Mm-hmm. They hit big on the Watson trade, gave them a ton of picks to work with and play with. And I think that set an environment to help Stroud succeed. And then Stroud was the real deal. They could do all this for the Titans, mm-hmm. and Levis turns out to be a kind of a blah average quarterback, which that could happen.
But they're giving him a chance. They go out and not only do they hire Ryans, they go out and they hire Slowick.
Slowick was a great pickup.
As the offensive coordinator. So you're bringing your young quarterback along slowly. You're surrounding him with a few playmakers. Your offensive line has gotten better, led by Laramie Tunsil.
They fixed it quicker than I thought they were going.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So everything came into place for this team. But they were doing it the right way. It just so happened C.J. Stroud jumped a couple of squares. He missed a couple of squares and jumped and was much more advanced than what they probably thought he would be. They probably thought it would take him, you know, majority of the season to kind of get his feet, you know, set in what he was doing. But it happened a lot earlier than that. So you put all of that together with the people that they surrounded him with, the coaches that they surrounded him with. They had a plan going in, but C.J. Stroud just superseded the plan because of his ability to play the game at the quarterback position.
And it's not as simple as, let's just say, we replace C.J. Stroud with Bryce Young. We give Bryce Young everything C.J. Stroud had last year. We give him the coaching staff. We give him the weapons. We give him everything that Stroud had. That's absolutely no guarantee that Bryce Young is the offensive rookie of the year. I mean, it's not as simple as that. But clearly the Texans had a plan, to use that word again, had a plan for Stroud. And to Derek's point, he exceeded that plan. Mm-hmm. But it clearly worked. And there's the hope is that whatever the Titans are building here, as Willie listed, they can get the same output from Will Levis.
And there's another theme that I heard from Lombardi that made me think about the Titans. What did we hear a lot when they decided to move on from Mike Vrabel, D-Mace? It was the press release had a running theme that we don't have everybody on the same page, right? Mm-hmm. And then it came out, there was a lot of talk of, well, Rand Carthon, Mike Vrabel. Vrabel maybe wasn't all in on Carthon, and they didn't get off to a great start. There wasn't cohesiveness. You heard Lombardi talk about, you know, there's no monuments for committees, right? But we're testing out this new regime of collaboration. That is their magic word. And they took a lot of steps when they hired Brian Callahan over the summer to try to present the Titans this new team where everybody knows their role, everybody's on the same page, nobody has so much more power than the other, but everybody falls in line. That's going to be put to the test here. But what I'm seeing so far, what they have tried to do, I think looks pretty – everybody looks on board mm-hmm. with what they've done. You can see what they've tried to do. And once again, in the middle of the season, we might be going, well – they thought it looked like a good plan.
It was a good plan
until
they started.
Until this happened or that happened. But at least it does look like they are succeeding in the collaboration mm-hmm. part of it.
Well, everything they're doing from an offensive standpoint as well as from a defensive standpoint, and if you look at what they're doing with their offensive coaches, mainly the head coach and the offensive coordinator, they are surrounding Will Levis with the knowledge that he's going to need, the experience from the coaching staff that he's going to need, and also the players that he's going to need, not just on offense, because we know that you can have players on offense. If you ain't got nothing on defense, then you better score 35 points a game to beat everybody. But they went out and they revamped their secondary. They went and got some D linemen. They revamped their linebacking core. This team is trying to hold teams to 14 points or 17 points or less so their young quarterback doesn't feel as if he has to go out there and play hero ball. Everything they're doing is geared toward their quarterback and the day they step into that new stadium. How many times have I said that? And it seemed, and I even heard, was it Rand Carthon or Brinker? They even mentioned the same thing. Everything we're doing now is in place because, one, that stadium that is going to be built in 3 more years. We want to make sure we have a competitive team, a team that can win in the playoffs and win big when we move into that stadium.
And that is the tougher part of this, right? Yeah. I think it would have been, as we've said many times before, it's not that hard to throw a lot of money and plug holes mm-hmm. for one season, but what is your stair step to the tough part? And that is to get better and get into the discussion of contenders, right? But this is stage one. But their goal was, let's give our quarterback a chance to be competitive and see if he's the right guy. And I think they have executed that plan. If he crashes and burns, I don't think it's going to be because they're not giving him a chance.
Exactly. If he crashes and burns, they're getting another. And that's why I said, this is the year that Will Levis needs to prove to them that he's the quarterback of the future, point blank. Because if he's not, they don't have time to sit around and wait. Well, let's give him another year. Let's see. No, you don't have time in the NFL to do that. Because the minute you start hesitating, everybody else is running past you. The minute you start looking around trying to find your quarterback, Everybody else is looking. Everybody else is moving past you. So either you are our quarterback and we're going to figure it out and find out this year, or we're moving on, and we're moving on quickly. We don't have time to sit and wait.
615-737-1025, our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Coming up next, there is a fascinating story in the world of NFL broadcasting that I would love to get Willie's opinion on. We'll do that next. Tune into 93.3 FM, Totally Hits Nashville, this Saturday for MTSU football. The Blue Raiders will open the season at home and take on Tennessee Tech. Pregame starts at 4:30 and kickoff is at 6. Coverage also available on the 93.3 FM Totally Hits Nashville app and at totallyhitsnashville.com. Willie and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Adam Bingen, Willie Donick, Derek Mason. He got a call to do a filling, Dr. Mason DDS. So he ran off to
there was actually somebody that texted that they needed a crown.
Yeah, maybe that he went to go get that fixed.
Coincidence?
I don't know. Responding
to the text line. Wait a minute. He's back. He left his wallet. That's why. His keys. He couldn't get anywhere. Don't be late to your meeting. You got to fill that crown, Dr. Mason.
So, Willie, I saw this yesterday.
For people that don't know, yes. Derek got an absolute random text out of nowhere asking about Dr. Mason.
He forgot his light, too. What's going on, Derek? Important. Clearly not in ready to replace that crown.
Yeah. What'd you lose, D-Mace?
Cell phone.
Now you might as well stay here, then.
You don't have a phone, either? How can we page Dr. Mason?
Who's
Bobblehead?
To say?
Don't worry about it.
Okay.
We'll figure it out. Either way. I saw this very interesting story on ESPN. So as many of you know, Tom Brady is going to be calling NFL games for Fox this upcoming season as a part of their number one NFL crew. He is also in the process of being approved as a partial owner of the Las Vegas Raiders. Why? Who knows? But that's what's happening. So here's a story that came out yesterday on ESPN from Seth Wickersham. While Tom Brady's approval as a partial owner of the Raiders is pending, he will be forced to abide by unique and severe restrictions in his dual role as a Fox broadcaster, the league announced Thursday. Well, I guess it was today. I guess they formally announced it today. I think it was reported yesterday. Brady is not permitted to be in another team's facility, is not permitted to witness practice, and is not permitted to attend broadcast production meetings either in person or virtually. The lack of access to coaches and players before games could be the most severe restriction. Those meetings at which a broadcast crew meets with the matchup's head coaches and key players are often a lifeblood of insight for the telecast. Now, Willie, in your role as Predators play-by-play announcer, you have those meetings before every game. You meet with your crew. You meet with the Predators head coach. You do a lot to prepare for every night's broadcast. I know that Tom Brady is a special case. He's the greatest quarterback who ever lived by pretty much every account. But what is the challenge he is going to face as a broadcaster if he can't have those meetings that you have before every Predators game where you're preparing, you're talking to the people you need to talk to?
Well, put yourself in the shoes of Tom Brady, who has never done a game
Correct.
At any level. Forget about a college game or the Presbyterian Mercer game, which is Derek Mason's underdog pick for week one. He hasn't done any games. He's done practice games, I'm sure. But I agree with the term of it is a key, I think, source of insight and preparation is getting on the same page, getting some of the storylines of the teams that you are going to broadcast. Keep in mind that in the NFL, when you do telecasts, you're not watching a team's announcers, right? And that often annoys a viewer. And I think, for example, if somebody were to be doing the broadcast for a Titans game in week three, and somebody didn't know who did the game, overlooked the fact that the Titans traded Malik Willis, who was on the roster before. Things like that come up, and you say to yourself, well, why doesn't that broadcaster know that? Well, he's not following the Titans every week, every day, like so many of the people watching the broadcasts are. So couple all that together. Tom Brady is going to jump into that seat on the number one spot.
Replacing Greg Olsen.
The number one announcer team, day one, where he will be expected to know everything about both teams, and there will be an enormous audience watching him. I think it's a huge story in general. Take away the Raiders part of it. Now you add that where he won't have a major tool that I think helps you understand what a team is going through. And I do think there is a lot of, I think, anticipation to see how good he is this year. Because let's keep in mind, legendary players who have been thrown into the announcer booth, some do well and some do not do very well. Joe Montana might be the greatest example of best quarterback who was the worst, most uncomfortable broadcaster who just decided after a season in NBC's booth and studio that it wasn't for him. Drew Brees also was another guy that was given a lot very quick.
That hurt my heart as a Saints fan to see Drew Brees struggle the way he did in the broadcast booth.
I don't think he was that bad, but he was given too many high-end assignments before and was not given a chance to work his way up.
Was he doing Notre Dame?
I think he was doing that.
Yeah.
The other classic example recently is Jason Witten, right? He was given the Monday Night Football slot right out of playing days and was really criticized heavily. So we're talking about Tom Brady here. He will be under the microscope. I think we have to be fair and say let's give him time to grow into the role a little bit. But, you know, this is the other element to this that maybe wasn't there when Joe Montana was trying this, that immediate evaluation that you, the announcer of a game, gets. I get it on my own level, but when you're doing the number one game on Fox, if he says flubs one thing, it's going to be trending on Twitter, right? If he makes a mistake in his preparation or overlooks some obvious thing to that team's fan base, he's going to get nailed for it, right? So I do wonder how he's going to do in general, but this just adds another layer to what is going to make it difficult for him to succeed in that role.
There are some other interesting elements to this. According to the article, aside from the access restrictions, Brady is subject to other applicable league policies common to other owners. He is prohibited from publicly criticizing game officials and other clubs. While Brady could, in theory, state that he disagrees with a call on air, he is subject to fines or even a suspension if he goes too far. He is subject to the league's gambling policy, and he is subject to the league's anti-tampering policies. He is permitted only, quote, strictly social communication with members of other clubs, according to the slide that the league presented. So
okay, so let's create a situation that will likely come up at some point. A very borderline call. Let's just say it's pass interference.
I was going to say pass interference.
Pass interference could be the classic, where Tom Brady, as the analyst, should tell you straight up whether he thinks it's the right call or the wrong call. It is obviously very subjective, but the viewer wants him to tell it like he sees it. Now, look. You know, as myself, Chris Mason, we are hired by the team. We're the team's announcers. But fortunately, we work for a team that understands that we have to give you the truth. When it's a tough call, you know, in hockey, there's a lot of borderline calls. Hey, Yes. Was that a hook? Was that not? It is our job to tell you that if we think it's a bad call against the Predators, we would say that. But if the Predators catch a break and we think it's a bad call against their opponent, we need to tell you that. But you're basically saying that by rule, in theory, it's a conflict of interest to where he can't criticize the league, Brady?
It sounds like it would be no different than if after a Cowboys game, Jerry Jones always ends up doing some sort of news conference after a Cowboys game. If he were to be overly critical of game officials, Jerry Jones could be a subject to a fine. Tom Brady, according to this, would be held to the same standards as other owners in the NFL while calling a game. So that's the challenge.
I think the viewer just wants to hear Tom Brady's true opinion of each thing that happens in the game and not have it be compromised by this. So we'll see if he's able to maneuver through that maze, right? Because it is something that I would think will be on his mind to try to avoid this, especially his level of inexperience, right? It's been one thing if he'd been broadcasting for 10 years and then made this move to the Raiders, I think he might have an easier time to adjust, to say, okay, I've been calling a certain way for 10 years. I'll just adjust a little bit where I need to be able to do this. But he's coming in cold turkey, a rookie, thrown into the major leagues for the toughest or the biggest games with the biggest audiences, and he's got to navigate this.
Is he with Kevin Burkhardt?
Yes.
Okay, so it's Kevin Burkhardt and Tom Brady. It was Greg Olsen, who I think slides down to
and
the
Kevin Burkhardt is
team.
An excellent announcer, but he's moved up pretty quick, too. It's not like he's got 10 years as the number one play-by-play guy.
But just the idea that he wouldn't be able to have those meetings, I know how important those meetings are.
Sure. I'm sure he can get it. He'll get it through Burkhardt. He'll get it through his team.
But he can ask questions, Brady, that other guys can't because 100%. Of his ability
to play the game.
He knows what
to ask more, yes. And Tom Brady might get a better answer. If Tom Brady's sitting there and wanting to ask a question
to Will Levis.
To Will Levis.
I don't think they're doing any Titans games this year.
Right.
But let's just say.
But Will Levis would be like eager to give a great answer to Tom Brady. He may not be as eager or might be a little bit more guarded if Kevin Burkhardt asks that question. It's a great, fascinating topic.
It will be fascinating to see what happens there. That does it for us today on Willie and D-Mace. Stoneman and Company coming up next. 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Closing time, turn all of the lights on.